it bad luck. Hello. Hi. How are you? Welcome back to more of this thing. The beat goes on, dude. The saga goes on. Went to the dentist today. I've talked a lot about this on this show with my anxiety, with my panic disorder. I have a hard time going to the dentist. I have a hard time relinquishing control there, surrendering, trusting. It's just a difficult place for me. It wasn't always. It's weird. It's just become a difficult place. I used to do like the nitrous. I could take drugs. I look back and I'm like, there was a time when like being a pothead and being always high and always a little bit drunk was good for me in my anxiety in certain situations. Flying, going to the airport and getting a cocktail at like the bar at the airport or two or three or four made flying a lot easier. Going to the dentist and being like, load me up with nitrous oxide, get me stoned as hell, and I'll just sit here and rock out while you drill into my mouth and I don't care. Being sober for stuff, it's like just going in full on raw dog as a person with panic disorder. It's a little intense. Went in today to get an x-ray of my head because they needed to see if this bone graft is in the right place for them to put this implant in. And the guy comes back to me, he's like, hey, good news. The bone graft is right where it needs to be. We got plenty of room to work with. Whoever put it in did an excellent job. This is going to be a slam dunk, super easy process. Bad news, because of course, bad news, on the other side of your mouth, a root canal that you had done last year didn't take, and there's a big pool of infection sitting at the bottom of it right now, and the only thing that can be done now, since you've already had a filling on that tooth and you've already had a root canal on that tooth, is that tooth now has to come out and be replaced with an implant. So, yeah, dude! Woo! I get to do more surgery on my mouth, even more! Just num 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 num, I love it, let's go, let's just do it all! Let's just keep doing. Let's just never stop taking teeth out of my head and replacing them with fake teeth. Let's just get them all done, dude. Let's just rock and roll. Every few months, I just want to go back to the dentist and have them rip into my jaw again. And just we'll just keep doing it. Because rock and roll. And I'm trying to just be more positive about it because I don't like it. But what am I going to do? It's an opportunity to lean in to fear, to discomfort, to my own lack of control, to fear of mortality, fear of unwellness, fear of pain. Ugh. Yeah. All right. Whatever. Okay. Not going to spend too much time here at the top. I don't really have much to talk about. I could have done a bad take brigade on any number of things that were said by Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert this week. There were things. I could talk about the people who are freaking out about Ariel in the Little Mermaid movie. Here's my take on that. I will do a brief thing on this. Here's the thing about that is like, it's just not going to be that great of a movie. Sorry to burst the bubble. So what is the big deal? What are the stakes? And it's not going to be a good movie because Halle Bailey's in it. Halle Bailey looks great, looks very well cast. But it's not going to be a good movie because Disney kind of sucks and everyone just needs to like come to terms with that, that like Disney, like here's the thing about Disney is the vast majority of their library of movies and TV shows and media is absolute ass. The entirety of the Disney Channel and every TV show that's ever been made for the Disney Channel, every Disney original movie, the vast majority of films produced by Disney. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking of the old classics. You're thinking of your Cinderellas and your Pinocchios and your Snow Whites, these seminal classic works of classic cinema that were so impressive, especially when you consider how they were made at the time, hand-drawn frames, one at a time, this amazing process. And you're thinking of Pixar. You're thinking of like Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. and Inside Out and Up and like these really fantastic films. These are the minority. Disney produces like 600 movies a year and like 600 new TV shows a year. And like once a year, Disney Pixar puts out a good movie. Once every couple years puts out a good movie. And like once every like 5 to 10 years, Disney puts out a decent film. You know, every once in a while, there's Remember the Titans. Every once in a while. But every one of these Disney remakes has been bad. The Lion King had Donald Glover and Beyonce in it, dude. And it was like gorgeously animated. That thing looked incredible. And it was not as good as the 90s cartoon. You watched it and you went, I think I'd just rather watch the cartoon. Because it's weird watching these photorealistic animals acting out beat for beat, shot for shot, the exact same movie, exact same screenplay as the 90s cartoon. But since they're photorealistic, they don't have like emotion on their faces. The cartoons were able to convey emotion. You know, when Simba is going up to his dad and going, get up, dad, get up. He's actually like, you can see the sadness on his face and he's like crying. And then when the photorealistic cat does it in the new version, you're like, it's just not there. It's not connecting. The moment's not as palpable. Even though like, inarguably, the animation is stunning. But the movie was mid. And it wasn't Donald Glover's fault. And it wasn't Beyonce's fault. It was Disney's fault. Disney's just not very good. Disney Plus is the worst streaming app. Get used to it. Get over it. Every Star Wars show on Disney Plus, bad. Every Marvel show on Disney Plus, bad. Hey. You're all wrong if you're disagreeing with me. They're not good. And this Little Mermaid movie's probably going to be pretty mid. Aladdin, mid. Kind of bad, actually. Beauty and the Beast, mid, kind of bad. Like, which ones were good? Jungle Book was kind of good. That was kind of good, the Jungle Book remake. This one, like Halle Bailey looks great. And people are mad because they're racist. So let's be clear about that. White people are mad because they're racist. There's no other reason. They're just straight up racist. They're talking about a mythological creature being black and being like, she can't be black. That's stealing from our culture. What culture? You don't have any. We don't. Like, nah, that's not how that works. You don't get to do uno reverse on cultural appropriation when it comes to mermaids. So people just being racist. Frustrating that in 2022, we still have people being racist about weird shit like that. Getting mad that there's black people who are elves and dwarves in The Lord of the Rings. You racist. You big time racist. But here's the real thing that no one's talking about. It's like, the movie is gonna be fine at best. So who cares? It's like, it's gonna be fine. It's gonna be fine. And the stakes are just not that high. But yeah, people being racist, and that's annoying. Okay, my sister-in-law, Lisandra, has been doing facilitations for people for cord-cutting ceremonies and doing therapy with people on healing narratives from their past and stuff like that. I recently did a cord-cutting ceremony with her. I talked about this on last week's episode with my guest, Christian Branscombe, when we talked about shame. And this is sort of the conclusion of a trilogy. I talked about forgiveness with Wit and about my inability to forgive myself, let myself off the hook for things. Then I talked about shame with Christian. And that was when I talked to Christian, I had just gotten back from doing the cord cutting, and I thought a good capper on this trilogy of like healing and self-love and self-care would be to talk with Lisa about cord cutting and what that is and what that entails. So here's my challenge to you, listener, as we go into this conversation, as we embark on this conversation. My challenge to you is to lean in, is to open up and to lean in. Okay. And I say this because some of you might not have a problem with this conversation. Some of you might just be like, yeah, I'm down with everything that's being talked about here. I have no problem accepting any of this. But I just know myself. And I know that if there are people who are anything like me, who come from a space of like ultra skepticism and like militant atheism, which is what I came from for years and years and years, is anything that had the slightest hint or smack of spirituality or magic or mysticism or anything kind of ethereal outside of the physical world that I could see and quantify with hard scientific evidence, I rolled my eyes at instantly, gave a big old groan to, and instantly wrote off. And I've been trying in my life in the last few years to not do that. And that's my challenge to you as we go into this conversation is, stay open. There's a prayer that I say with my sponsor regularly that comes from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but we sort of do our own version of it, and it's called the set-aside prayer. And we just say things like, hey, help me set aside what I think I know about recovery, what I think I know about sponsorship, what I think I know about therapy, what I think about I know about mental health, about God, about prayer, about the universe. Help me set these things aside so that I can be open to a new experience with these things. So that's what I want for you as we go into this conversation, is set aside everything that you think you know about healing, about overcoming grief, shame, old narratives that are holding you back, about the power that exists inside of you, about the powers of the universe, the way the universe works, about spirituality. Set that aside for the next hour or so and be open to what we're talking about. Because some of the stuff we talk about on here might sound a little like you might have the instinct to roll your eyes. And if you do have that instinct, I want you to notice it, pay attention to it, notice that it's happening. And remember that typically what that is like that signifies some kind of resistance in you. There's some part of you that is resistant to the information that is being brought up. And the way that you resist is by writing it off, by dismissing it, by rolling your eyes at it, by groaning at it, even though you have no more reason to dismiss it as not real. You know, like there is, because I mean, my reasoning as a skeptic would be like, well, come on, there's just no physical, scientific, quantifiable, peer-reviewable evidence to back that up. But like, I don't know. We haven't really fully explored this in the scientific realm. And I would say that there's actually lots of evidence to back up the fact that there's lots of stuff going on in the quantum sense that we don't understand, that there are dimensions at play that we don't fully comprehend or can't fully comprehend. I think even scientists acknowledge this. Quantum physicists acknowledge this all the time, that they're like, we're looking at like the smallest portion of a five-dimensional chessboard, and we can only see in three dimensions, and we can't see the fourth or the fifth or the sixth or the seventh, and we're gathering data based on a very small chunk. They know that there's stuff going on that we don't fully understand. They know that we don't really know what happens when you go through a black hole, or, you know, that time could be a dimension that we are not capable of perceiving in any other way than the present. So that's all I'm saying, is just stay open. Set aside what you think you know so that you can be open to a new experience. All right, this is my sister-in-law Lisa and me. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Here we go. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my sister-in-law, Lisandra Brunemeyer, about cutting the cord. What's up, YouTube? How you doing? What's up, Spotify? What's up, everybody listening, wherever you are, in your cars or whatever's going on? We're back with another thing. It's the thing again. If you're listening to the audio version, then you already know. We've already been talking for a while, and we're just here with the guests now. But YouTube, what's up? How's everybody doing? Welcome back. I'm here with my sister, Lisa. This is fantastic. She came in on short notice, and like 5 minutes ago, I was like, she was like, wait, is this a video thing? And I was like, yeah. And then she went and got camera ready in like 2 minutes, did this wardrobe change. You look fantastic. I was like, I'm wearing a sleeveless sweatshirt, so it's very cash.
I thought this was going to be all audio. I had no idea. So doing my best here.
You look great. You look fantastic. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I apologize. I'm a little congested with fires and allergy season. So hopefully you guys can hear me okay.
Yeah, I think you sound good, and if you need to sniffle at all, that's okay.
It might happen.
I'm really glad that we got you in here. There's sort of been a nice trajectory on the last three episodes. I talked to my friend Wit about forgiveness, and there was sort of this storyline in that episode where I was like, I have a hard time forgiving myself, Wit, and I told him like I let other people off the hook really, really easily. But I have a really hard time forgiving myself. And he was like, well, why don't you just do it? Do it right here on the podcast. And I was like, I don't know if I can. I was like, I would like to. I would really like to, but I don't know if I can. And I didn't on that episode. I was like, yeah, I'm hanging on to that. But it was part of this narrative that's been coming up in my life of like, I really hang on to stuff when it comes to holding myself accountable. And I have a really hard time letting myself off the hook. And I have a really hard time like giving myself a break. And I hang on to shame, like shame from deep down in my life. And that was right before I came out to Utah and hung out with you and Adam, and you invited me to come do a cord cutting ceremony. And then like the, after that, the next podcast episode was me talking to a guy who was a person who spent 25 years of his life in prison for committing first degree murder when he was 19. Wow. And is now out of prison and is a life coach who teaches people about shame and about getting rid of their shame and parting with their shame. So it's been a nice little trajectory. And I talked briefly in that episode with him about cord cutting. I was like, do you know about this? And he was like, no, I've never heard about it. I was like, oh, it's like this crazy psychedelic thing that happened to me. It's so like intensely powerful. I didn't know what I was getting into. But yeah, we were hanging out and you just made this offer. You were like, do you want to come over and do a cord cutting ceremony? I had no idea what you were talking about. And I said, yes, because I this whole year has been about like digging into whatever I can dig into to try to get to the root of like what's going on with my anxiety, with my fear, with my discomfort. And then, you know, trying to heal from narratives that aren't serving me and forgive myself and move forward in love. What is, for the people listening or watching on YouTube, Lisa, what is a cord cutting ceremony?
It's a great question. And you'll probably get a lot of different answers depending on who you ask. So just keep in mind, this is what I perceive cord cutting as. And, you know, I am a practicing witch, so it is very common in witch culture to practice cord cutting. You don't actually even have to have a ceremony. You can do it with meditation. You can do it just even in your mind's eye, if you will. But I should probably move this so I don't keep hitting it. What a cord cutting ceremony, in my opinion, is it is an opportunity for someone to cognitively decide to disconnect from either a person, a narrative, a belief structure, or even like a habit that's not serving them anymore. And, you know, energetic cords are very real things. We don't really realize that we have them. It's something that we naturally develop with other people, even with ourselves, around ideas around ourselves. It's just something that attaches us to other people. Well, other people. Let's just go with other people. That's an easier thing to like, you know, correlate. So energetic cords can be weak, they can be messy, they can be ugly, they can be super strong. But at the end of the day, if we're really trying to move past something, especially something like trauma, a bad relationship, or even like transitioning. So for instance, mothers and daughters need to transition from the mother-daughter dynamic to, you know, when they're older. Cord cutting is really useful for that. Cord cutting is a cognitive awareness that something needs to shift and change, and I facilitate a visual representation of that cord cutting.
Okay. That's a great definition. And I mean, yeah, like it's so interesting because I think what a big part of what I've been realizing since doing the ceremony and also through this year is like the core of my fears, and I think the core of most people's fears, is it comes down to like a fear of death, which is a fear of change. But it all funnels down to this ultimate shift that none of us fully understands, this transformation that occurs at death. And everything that changes is like this reminder of this thing that's coming. Is like, I don't like the way my relationship functions with my parent, as you said, to change. I don't like the way that my relationship functions with myself to change. And even though it's constantly changing, whether we like it or not, but we energetically hold on to these things and it creates these very strong energetic cords that can really keep us stuck and keep us bound. And that's the idea, right?
It is. Well, yeah. And again, like if you want to change your life, you can't if you aren't aware of the issue and taking accountability for it, mm-hmm. right? Like, I mean, if you aren't cognitive of what the problem is and your portion of contributing to the problem, how can you ever change anything? So, you know, approaching something like this is simply a belief that you can change. And then it's, you know, putting action into that and actually doing something about it. Now, granted, this is also can be a very spiritual experience. This is not just a representation. It's not just playing with your mind. Like, you are playing with energy and you are playing with higher source. At least in my opinion, you are. You're connecting to your higher self. You're connecting to the part of you that wants you to be whole, that wants you to move away from narratives that keep you small. And that's part of the reason I absolutely love doing cord cuttings, is I love watching people take their power back into their own hands. And that's what generally cord cutting is.
Yeah. You said to me that, like, you don't really do anything. It's them that really does it. It's the person that's in the room that does it. You're just there to facilitate and hold the space and, like, create the environment and sort of, like, nudge and guide. But really, it's like people, it's one of those things that you really get out of it what you put into it. Yes. If someone comes in and sits down with you and is like, well, show me what you got, magic lady, like, show, like, bring in some spirits and rock my world. It's like, well, it's not like they have to bring it. They have to bring the intention of what it is that they want to cut ties with.
Oh yeah. I mean, I love this line of work because I get to just show up as myself authentically, which I'm a nice person, but I'm not anything extraordinary. But just being myself in that space allows for them to move forward and learn how to heal themselves. So my philosophy in any of the ceremonies that I do is that you are your own healer. You do not need me to tell you how to do this. I am just going to hold space for you to do this safely. And sometimes things will come through me for you, and whether or not you want to hear it is completely up to you. So people have autonomy of choice in these ceremonies. And I mean, sometimes they're super spiritual, and sometimes they're super witchy, and sometimes they're just very, like, emotional, and they're whatever this person needs them to be.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier about, like, witchcraft, that you're a practicing witch, and the this can be very witchy. Do you happen to know, like, what the specific origins of doing something like this are? Is it rooted in, like, witchcraft, or do you know, like, where this the idea of this began? Is it something that humans have always been doing, or in some fashion or other, I assume it is. People have always been finding ways to cut ties with narratives or people or situations that aren't serving them, but, like, being intentional about it in this ceremonious way, like, what are the roots of that?
Well, I mean, I think this goes back so far. It's probably, like, origins are probably not traceable, but from what I have researched and what I know about it is that this is deeply rooted in paganism, which paganism is the foundation of witchcraft. Some pagans believe in deities, some don't, like myself. But really, all pagans celebrate and honor Mother Earth. So most people, like myself, work with herbs. We believe in, you know, working with Mother Earth to heal. So, so in paganism, it's one of the most ancient religions, if you will, even though it's not a religion. It's more of a way of life. The cord and the knot is actually a huge part of their culture. So if you look into, like, Celtic paganism, for instance, you will see the Holy Trinity, the three triangles that makes that knot. That's also, Christians use it as the Holy Trinity. That is actually a design that creates the sacred geometry. I don't know if anyone knows what that is, but it all correlates. And so these concepts come from, I mean, before we probably even have, like, written literature about it. I know that witches were known to send sailors off with ropes with knots in them, and they would tie spells into it. Which I thought was really cute.
I love that.
It would like calm the storms. They would untie the knots, and it would help calm the storms. Hand fasting in paganism is huge. It's still practiced to this day. So people often weren't able to like access a minister when they wanted to get married. So they would hand fast with their partner, which was basically like an engagement, but they were allowed to be married from that point on, I believe. But it was considered like kind of like a pre-marriage marriage. So, you know, cords, energetic cords, hand fasting, knots, all of this goes way back. And it's in Nordic culture, it's in Celtic culture. I'm pretty sure even Egyptian culture has some form of cord cutting philosophy. Whether or not it was a ceremony, I don't know. I mean, I think this may be like the modern day witch may have made her own thing of this, you know.
Sure, it's probably been done many different ways. You even said at the beginning that you're like, it doesn't have to be done ceremoniously. It can be done in meditation. It's obviously one of those things that it's like, it's about the intention that the person who is doing the cutting is bringing to it. And I think a ceremony is almost just like providing an environment where a person can be singularly focused on that intention, and you as the facilitator creating an environment where they can really like, because I personally believe that we all always have access to these spiritual planes when we, if we really want to dig in, but it does take effort to try to center oneself and bring oneself into a present state. And I think like just providing a framework for that is very useful and powerful and helpful.
I agree. I grew up in the Christian religion, and I have deep love and affection for all faith bases. I think this is not ever meant to be like a bash on religion thing. It just didn't work for me having that type of classification of faith. But, you know, I believe that in some faith bases, we have a tendency to be taught to like mute our gifts, if you will. I remember being taught that to be able to speak to people who've passed or people who like honored moon cycling or the sun were considered demonic. So I spent half my life believing that my natural gifts, which I have some very big and beautiful natural gifts, were demonic. And so I suppressed them. I didn't use them. And yeah, so people can access this, whether or not they have been able to fine tune that part of their cognitive awareness or their brain. That's another thing. And it's hard. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah. There's almost like an abdication of the power in theism. I was reading in a book the other day of like theism versus non-theism and how theism is all about this externalized view of there's this external savior. There's this thing outside of you that if you are good enough and behave good enough, this thing will come and save you. And non-theism functioning in the very same way is sort of abandoning hope of like this external force or power to come and save you and understanding that that thing resides inside of you and that it's internal. But they're both two sides of the same coin. One is just seeking for help or redemption or, you know, that the magic from outside, some external thing that comes in and lifts you up. And the other is realizing that it comes from within. But I think that like, I think this is like weirdly what's happening with Christian people who like speak in tongues or get healed on stage. You know, they walk up and the preacher shocks them with the power of God. Is when you are energetically open to it, when you are open and willing and you're in that setting and you are open to the idea that like this man is going to shock the power of God into me. Without knowing it, you are digging into your own internal power for that moment. Whether there's a part of you that's going like, I'm kind of putting this on. I don't know. But I'm sure people have walked away from experiences like that going, I don't know what the hell just happened. I walked up on that stage and that guy touched me and it was like electricity rocked through my body. And I don't really necessarily deny that they had that experience. I just don't think personally that it is the way that setting frames it, which is like this man who has the authority to pass this external power through you is passing it through you. Instead, it's like a collective of people tapping into their each of their individual internal power cells, but the narrative around that setting gives the power away to some external force rather than acknowledging that, like, no, we're all coming together right now and doing a really powerful thing as a collective.
I agree. Yeah. I actually, it's funny you say that, because I think one of the things I thought was really silly in Christianity was speaking in tongues. And then post-religion, I've actually experienced, I've had extremely prophetic moments where I've spoken in several languages, ancient languages. And, you know, of course, people could be like, well, how do you know what that is?
Right.
At the end of the day, I don't. But I do know that I don't know what I was saying and what was coming through me. And I don't believe in possession, so I wasn't possessed by something. But, you know, I believe that we've lived many lives, and whether or not we can tap into those lives, I mean, I don't see why not. Like, I don't believe time is linear. So, like,
right. There's that whole thing, you know,
I think that's a big one.
it comes from this space of like, how open to this can you be? Because you get out of it what you put into it. And I think that those people who are speaking in tongues or whatever, like, it's really easy to look at that and go like, that's silly. But it's like, well, something's happening there.
Yeah.
So whether it's people collectively putting an act on for each other because everyone's afraid to be the one person who goes like, I'm not feeling it, you guys. Whatever it is, like, something is taking place. Something psycho-spiritually is taking place. I personally believe that there is some element to it. It's like, you know, I would go to church growing up and I would feel the spirit. I'd be at church and I would feel that, and that would be for so many people, that's the confirmation to them that God is real, that their church is real, is this feeling of like, ooh, I'm getting a warm fuzzy that's coming in. And it's like, that's not necessarily wrong. I don't think looking back, like, oh, I was just tricking myself. It's like, no, that was happening, but I didn't know what to call it. And I was being taught to call it like, that's the spirit of God telling you that this room is the one room that has the access to this power. And that's sort of my beef with religion, is this sort of monopolizing of the power, when it's like, no, you can get that power in so many different ways. And when it comes to speaking in tongues, you also mentioned earlier sacred geometry, where it's like, people talk about this when they do DMT, when they do even ayahuasca, even sometimes acid or psilocybin, this idea of like seeing sacred geometry. It's almost like the framework of how the universe is structured or built. And you go to this realm where it's all built out of the sacred geometry. And there's like these beings that communicate almost telepathically. And so many people relay the same experience of seeing the same thing. And it's hard to convey in whatever language, in any modern tongue, to from one person to the next, exactly what it is that you saw or heard. But you just, it's almost like you just had to be there and to know, like, it happened. I'm not making it up.
Well, if it's real for you, then that's the only thing that it can be real for. Like, we are all living in a moment, like, momentarily. That's the only thing that's real to each and every one of us. And like, my perception of real and your perception of real is going to be different. Am I real when I'm not in your view? Like, if I'm not in your viewpoint, do I still exist? Right? Like, to me, I do, because I'm having a singular life experience. And this, I mean, I could go on for hours about this, but like, yes. Yeah. I'm with you on that. It's a personal experience. I personally left religion because of this philosophy that there is one and only one way for things to work. I think people like to have a checklist of information that makes them feel safe. It's a narrative that makes them feel safe, especially around death, like you brought up earlier. I lost my dad 3 years ago, and I 100% understand why the religious narrative is such a wonderful thing for people who are in extreme loss.
Yeah.
When this energy just disappears, which again, energy can't be created or destroyed, right? It can only be transferred. So where did this person's energy go? It is so much safer and easier to believe that somebody up above knows everything and that he's promising this beautiful ending for us versus taking your own accountability and your own personal power and accepting that post-death, we may not have an answer for. I mean, it could just be blank.
I don't think we're supposed to. I don't think that we in this form are supposed to have a clear-cut answer for it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's too much for our brains.
I've personally run the gamut of thinking that it 100% is a blank slate, that death is death and that's it. And when you're dead, the lights go out and it's nothing. And nothing is this weird thing that we can't even conceive of, because even though, as far as we can tell, we experience nothingness for all of the history of the universe up until we were born, it's still hard. We can't really conceive of what that is. That was my belief for a very long time. I am no longer of that belief. I now believe death is a doorway and that it's a matter of transformation, like so many things are, that just the nature of existence is to be constantly in flux and constantly in motion and constantly changing. And that's what really scares us about death. It's not the nothingness. It's the mystery of what does the transformation entail. And that's the part where I'm like, we're not really supposed to know or understand it. You can't know it until you get to it. It's sort of like going through checkpoints of mental health in your wake, in this existence, of like, there are certain things that you can't understand until you get there. And like, you don't understand what it will feel like on your wedding day until you're there. You don't understand, you don't actually know it until you're there. And that's so trying to understand that experience before you have it is futile and impossible. But I definitely have come around to the persuasion, weirdly enough, that I don't believe it is an ending point.
I mean, you could blast your brain with DMT and give it a go.
Yeah.
Apparently that's like doorway to death, but I don't
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. Get a little peek. Get a little sneak peek.
I don't have personal experience with that, so I can't tell you, but, I've heard really interesting things about it.
So how did you get into becoming a facilitator for cord cutting for people? Did you read about it on the internet while you were looking up witchy spells or something? Or did a friend tell you about it? Like, how did this come about?
Okay. I think, because I was trying to think about that. First of all, I had no intention of being a facilitator of cord cutting. That was never even in my viewpoint. It was TikTok.
Oh, really?
I saw a video on – I love TikTok. It's my favorite 20 minutes before bed that I get to have where I just get to watch stuff. Yeah. So I was watching Witch Talk, which is just a really fantastic, little diversion of TikTok. And I saw a cord cutting ceremony and I was like, what is that? So I went and watched a few videos on it and I started researching it and I was like, this sounds exceptionally useful. Let's do this. And I selfishly had really good reasons for doing this because my husband and I were dealing with just some really uncomfortable situations revolving his ex-wife. And so I realized when I learned about energetic cords that he's never cut his one of his many cords, because we all have many cords, but he had never really completely cut his marital cord with her. So he was really emotionally invested in her well-being, which I don't think is a bad thing to have, but it's hard when it's a tumultuous relationship to carry that for somebody, especially when it's not reciprocated. So I did it for him because I was like, I think you need to cut this cord. And it was such a profound experience right off the get-go.
Was that your first one?
I think it was. I'm trying to remember because it's been a while, but I think it was.
I think it's special that it started as an act of service, that it started as something that you were like, I want to do this as a gift for my partner. And that's sort of how you've carried it. Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, I actually haven't done my own cord cutting until about 2 months ago. So that's kind of sad because I don't actually believe in – I believe I should always do something that I do for other people. I should try it.
Yeah.
But I just hadn't thought about doing it for myself. I didn't really think I had any cords that needed cutting.
you're going to go help everybody else cut their cords, but you're
wrong.
Good.
Yeah. That's called doing our own work. This is shadow work right here. So, I'm pretty sure I started with him. And so what I found really interesting in that first ceremony is I actually saw a visual representation of their relationship in the candles. So cord cuttings are done on a plate, a hot plate, ideally. I've had them break on me. So now I have a cast iron plate. And you melt two candles onto the plate and you tie them with a twine. And then I put salt on the bottom of them and then I put herbs on them for each person, depending on what they need. So you set it down and then the person... Do you want me to explain how it works now or do you want
Please.
Me? Okay. So
let's get into it. 11 herbs and spices, KFC style.
Herbs and spices. I'm like, okay, I'm feeling some jasmine flower. I'm feeling, yeah. I always put elderflower on it. It's a really beautiful herb used for safety and security and spiritual transformation. So, I always have all my go-tos and I add bits and pieces depending on what I'm feeling for each person. And then what the person does is they sit in front of the altar, I call it, the altar of the cord cutting. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we've been talking about what it is they're cutting from for a while. And because I have them talking while I'm creating the altar. And I ask them to tell me the good, the bad, the hard, the beautiful. I want them to go through the full gamut of the relationship while we're preparing for this cord cutting. And then I put the altar in front of them and I have them ceremoniously light each candle. And in each candle, I have them put an intention. Now, if it's a person they're cutting from, they're gonna etch the name of the person they're cutting from on one and then their name on another. And that's a very common cord cutting. It's usually with people, but usually... Okay, I say it's usually with people, but really, like, it's also with a narrative. It's something in themselves that is connected to why this relationship is troubled or struggling or why they need to remove themselves from it. Yeah. So it always ends up becoming more than that, right? It's always more than just a person. And they speak their intention verbally. Mm-hmm. Mind you, I've created a container of safety around people. And what that means is I cast a circle around us of safety so that no energies are allowed in that could potentially be harmful or that could be even just like want to play a little bit and, you know, test the waters around us because we're energetically, we're really like ramping things up and energies are drawn to that. Like it's like a beacon of light. It's like the moths are flying around the light. So I created a container. The person puts intention in the cords and then they light the candles and we watch the candles burn. Every single time, some type of visual representation of whatever they're cutting from occurs in the candles. So, and it doesn't
I
happen
heard this.
The same.
Somebody asked me, I was telling someone I did this and they were like, what happened with the candles? They're like, did you see something? And I was like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to be looking for that. But there is some sort, I don't know if you saw it when I did it. I was so immersed in like the world of what was taking place energetically. I think I missed the visual representation that might've been taking place on the candles.
You didn't have to. Like this, each person's ceremony is going to happen the way they need it to. And I have learned to quiet my ego when it's happening, worrying that I'm not doing it correctly or that it's not burning correctly or is it going to burn the way that it's going to, you know, like that's something I've had to work through for myself in sitting in facilitation for this is to not place any judgment on what's happening. What happens is meant to happen. So I don't know if you remember, but I ended up getting you a third candle.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that.
Remember that.
That's because, well, we did a lot of work in yours. We did, I mean, by far your journey has been the biggest one I've ever done. It was just, I mean, it was so
I win.
Beautiful. It was
I
so
I win cord cutting.
I feel like I wish we could have recorded it because it was so profound and beautiful and so much was moved in that ceremony. Like, and I felt that third cord come up because as you're speaking, doorways pop up for me. This is how facilitation works for me across the board. When I am sitting with somebody energetically and they're speaking to me, something may come out of their mouth that will open a doorway for me or pop a little door will pop up. And I'll be like, ooh, there's something in that doorway. You want to go in there and look at that doorway? And actually the day before when we were at dinner and you had said something, that's why I asked you to do a cord cutting. I saw a doorway open up. And I was like, ooh, there's a narrative there.
Ooh. It's so, you know, you talk about the ego, and my ego is the thing I had to combat the hardest while I was doing this with you because I have 11 years of an atheist skeptic in my head still who everything you're saying about casting a circle to keep the energy safe and everything like that, there is a person in me and I can hear, I'm sure there are listeners listening to the podcast who they can't help but roll their eyes and go, oh, give me a fucking break.
Are you, for sure.
Like, oh, okay. You know, and it's like, but that sort of resistance, that comes from my ego. Mm-hmm. That comes from my, that is the part of me that resists change, that it will find any, and if I can just tell myself, like, this is stupid, because I definitely felt, there were times when we were doing it that I felt silly, that I was like, I'm talking out loud to people who are not in the room, but I was like, well, Lisa and Adam aren't going to judge me because they're the ones who invited me to this. So it'd be rude of them to judge me for talking out loud to myself. But also it's like when you feel yourself doing that, I just want to say to any listeners who might have that same voice in their head that I have, it's like, when you feel yourself doing that, just try to think like, yeah, but what happens if you just give into something like this rather than going like, oh, come on, give me a break. Like, what happens if you just like go, or I don't know, lean into it. Yeah. What happens if you're open instead of like, can you at least be willing to just to accept the possibility that we might not be completely full of shit, and that like the experience that I had, which was one of the most profound experiences of my life, was real. You know what I mean? It's like that ego thing. Because you talking about seeing doors opening and stuff like that and nudging people. And I'm like, yeah, like in order for it to work for me, it was like I had to move through all of that ego, all of that resistance, every time the voice in my head went, dude, what are you doing? What are we doing here? You know, I had to go, shush, shush, shush. This is actually really special, and please just come along, you know.
But that's a good way of dealing with it. I'm proud of you that you did that, because those protector parts, like, they're in all of us. I mean, saying the word witch out loud still makes me anxious inside. Like, I make myself say it for a reason, because there's such a negative connotation with the word, but people are not even remotely educated on what it actually means. Like, what true witchcraft means, right? So
people still have an idea that like you should be burned at the stake.
Absolutely. It's actually, there's people on TikTok talking about it, like, which is hilarious, because most Christian women, prayer is casting a spell. You are casting a spell by using your words or herbs. And people are all into doTERRA. They love their oils. Like,
blessing ladies, the house, blessing the family.
Come join the party. It's really good over here. So like,
and blessing the food. Yeah. Yes, like, you
this
are
is
doing
all witchcraft,
yes,
guys.
You're doing spells. Yes.
It's not, it's yes. So narratives are uncomfortable, and our ego wants us to pull away from it because it is potential for hurt. It's potential for, especially like, for instance, with you and your religious background, for feeling like you've been duped, right? And it's there to keep us safe, but it's okay to say, hey, like, I'm okay. There's no bear chasing me right now. I'm totally safe. And it's okay to lean into this. I am not telling you that what is happening is 100% factual truth. I don't think anything in life is factual truth. And I think if we all abided by that theory, we would probably be a lot nicer to one another.
Yeah.
So if you can just walk into things and go, you know what? I don't know. The only thing I know is I don't know anything. And that just gets worse as I get older.
And I have an intention that, like, I want something to work. I want to, you know, like, I was nervous walking in there. I was nervous walking into your house that day. I was like, I don't know what we're about to do. I don't know. We're about to poke around in places, and I don't really know. But like, I was like, I trust these people, and I think I'll be okay. But, you know, it is scary. It's scary because you're going like, well, but am I about to like get rid of who I've been for the last 30 plus years? Am I about to walk out of this room as a different person? Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready for that. Who is that person? You're telling me that in like an hour and a half, I'm going to have a whole different, like, a paradigm shift. I don't know if I'm ready for that. Like, people, even if where they are is uncomfortable, we are so afraid of change, so afraid of death, so afraid of the impermanence of things that we resist positive change, the possibility of positive change. That skeptic voice, that as you called it, maybe a more compassionate way to call it, that protector voice is just a way of avoiding the reality of change, because change is going to get you whether you accept it or not. This is a way I think you can be intentional about leaning into it.
Do you want to be a victim, or do you want to be someone who's intentionally doing something? Because those are two different energies. Like, I would much rather be like, you know what, I'm cognitively like choosing to change my life versus I've been thrown a deck of cards that they're falling all over the place and I have no control over anything. And granted that happens, but how we choose to receive information is the only thing we can control. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think it's just, those are very different energies, being a victim versus being intentional. And cord cutting is a very intentional thing. Like I make you, what you're doing is you're literally, like for instance with you, that resistance is you're mourning yourself.
Mm.
You're mourning. Like I miss parts of myself 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm a better person, but I miss parts of myself.
Oh yeah.
And I'd love to like bring some of that back into now, but that's, you know, that's my journey. That's my work. And every single time I do a journey, Austin, every single time I mourn the person that I am losing that day. Because I am losing somebody. I'm losing a part of myself and I'm moving into something else.
Well, and if you're separating from a literal other person too, which yeah. some people do, when Ooh. People, you know, it's like yeah. that I had a bunch of old relationships that I was working through and I was going like coming to the realization that like I don't just miss my most recent ex. I miss them all. I miss all of them. Yeah. And there's a part of me that wants to time travel back and be back together with each and every one of them and be back in our happiest moment and be back in some perfect moment 5, 10, 15 years ago where I was cuddling with this or that person, looking into their eyes, feeling love, overwhelming. And what that process was like accepting that I'm probably always going to miss these people. I'm probably always going to love these people. And I'm probably always going to like cherish and long for like the times that were, but accepting that those relationships were exactly what they needed to be. They were exactly as long as they needed to be. They came into my life at the right time. They left at the right time, that we were the right thing for each other, that like, I don't need to look at them as failures or as like, oh, I should have done this, that, or the other thing. It's like, no, it just happened the way it happened. Even the imperfection, even the fights, even the disagreements, the rough parts, like, Again, it's that fear of death, that fear of impermanence. Like I miss these people. I mourn the loss of these people, but also like I get to hold them forever in love in my hearts and know that like it's just part of that ever changing cycle, that continuous transformation, that like our the dynamic between me and them is just transformed into something else.
Yeah, you let go of the cord that yeah. was binding you a certain way. I mean, some people actually cut cords so that they can develop a better one. So it's cord cutting isn't always to remove someone from your life. And trust me, you can't force somebody out of your life.
Yeah.
So like I have cut some very malicious cords before and they don't want to be cut and the energy attacks me. I've been attacked by two cord cutting ceremonies. I actually have like scars from them.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was pretty wild, but it doesn't mean you get to remove that person from you, but what you get to do is you get to remove the energy around that person in regards to that specific dynamic of your relationship. So if you're cutting a cord with somebody who's abusive and who just is ill, has just nothing good for you, what you're cutting essentially is their ability to affect you because you're shifting your perspective around them. So I can't make someone disappear. I don't know how to do banishing spells. I'm not that advanced as a witch. Apparently you can do that. We'll see. But like to be able to say, I'm going to give you the power to choose your narrative around this relationship. You get to decide how to move forward with it. And you get to decide whether or not they have any influence in your life anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, cool.
What do you do personally, now that you've been doing this for a little bit and you've done, you know, several of these with different people, what is your process for preparing to be the person who's going to hold the space and establish the space and facilitate the experience?
So I clean the space. I use sage and I use Palo Santo to clean and fill the space. I will set up a container that's just an area that's just very comfortable for the person. I actually do have an intake form that I have people fill out now so that I can prepare.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've just found that like, it's nice to have a little more information on my side of things so I can just be prepared for what type of ceremony this is going to be. And I think it's a really good practice for somebody coming into one to fill it out because they have to look at these things ask themselves these questions, and then it just brings that awareness, right? Because we're manifesting right. something in a cord cutting. We're not just releasing, we're manifesting. And manifestation is literally the ability to be cognitive and aware of something to the point where we bring it to fruition. Mm-hmm. So I send them an intake form. I have them fill it out. I read through it. I ask every single person who's going to come into a ceremony, I say, I need you to start grieving this now. I need you to start the process of grief. So they come into it ready, already grieving whatever it is they're letting go of. And I set up the area, and I honestly, like, my job's pretty easy because it's different every single time. Mm-hmm. When I sat for you, it was, I feel like that was probably one of my more, like, I don't like the word witchy, but it's not the right term. I mean, I was getting, speaking to the dead.
Yeah.
If you're okay with me saying this, I saw you in multiple dimensions or multiple timelines. I spoke mm-hmm. with you in multiple timelines. I saw you from a little boy all the way to, now.
Yeah.
And, that was pretty wild, So it's not always like that for me.
Yeah, it was wild.
That was wild. And then the next night, the one I did, I felt I couldn't connect to any of those things for this person. And I almost felt like bad because I was like, why isn't it working? But
did you feel drained?
No, it just wasn't what he needed. He needed something complete. He needed me in action mode. That was the night that I had a plate shatter in the ceremony. It actually, okay. So that one did attack both of us, and he was bleeding. I was burned. And yeah, it was
the very next night.
Very next night. It shattered into 1,000 pieces on us.
Wow.
And it was, so he, that was a more malicious cord. That was a person who has very powerful dark energy, dark, dense energy. And her cord was not very happy about being cut. So she burned hot. Oh boy, does she burn hot. So that was a total, and that was a night where they needed me to move into action. They needed me to move because we actually had to shift halfway through and change it into a cauldron spell as well. And it was so powerful and beautiful. It was just completely different. So
it's almost like your job is just to like be ready. It's just like, yep. Just like be open. Cause again, it's like you told me, and like we talked about earlier, it's like, you're not really the one, you're not like casting a spell that's making them do something. It's not this, the preacher gives you the power of God and shocks you and gives you the power of tongues. It's like, you are inviting them to tap into their own power to cut ties with this cord energetically. And then you're there to be like, I'm here to try to keep this thing in a space that feels safe and productive and, yes. and positively charged. And I got to be ready for whatever energy they bring in, whatever power they're unleashing in this space.
Bingo. And I keep it contained. Energy is transferred, right? So, I mean, this sounds just so crazy, but like, if you're not careful, you can be irresponsible with this stuff. And energy can go to places it's not supposed to go. It can attach to things it's not supposed to attach to. So I am in facilitation, making sure that we dispose of this energy properly. So at the end of every ceremony, when I close the container, I always say, we are going to return this energy to Mother Earth, to Pachamama, and we are going to ask her to make this energy useful, to, turn it into soil and push it back up into, into a tree, into a person, whatever it may be. Make this energy useful. We don't want any of this attaching to anyone else unknowingly, and it can happen. So energy is a funny thing. It's, yes, we're cutting a cord, but there are still energies attached to those cords. Like there's, whether it's a belief system, again, like belief systems alone can be super detrimental. It's like, I don't want to be passing that type of energy onto someone who doesn't want to carry that. We all have narratives, we have contracts, we have all kinds of things that are attached to us that we never agreed to. And I'm spending my life helping people disconnect from those things. So,
You know, we talked a little bit about this. You sort of mentioned like that ceremony you did right after mine that was filled with a little bit of like some malevolent energy or some energy that was burning really hot, the plate breaking. When you're holding space and someone is going through a very psycho-spiritual experience, someone is, you know, permeating through space-time, or like someone's dead relatives are coming through, or someone's like past selves are coming through. What is the experience for you? I mean, like you said, you got into this, like you watched a TikTok on it and you're like, oh, let me research that and get into it. And then you did one for your husband. And like, as you've been, have there ever been times where you're like scared or uncomfortable, like, uh-oh, I don't know if I can contain this, or like, what is your experience? Or do you ever get bored? Are you ever like, oh my God, I'm not in the mood today? Like, how has this been for you as the person who gets to be in the room for all of these different people going through a very deeply personal experience?
It's a great question. Well, so I space out ceremonies. I'm very responsible with spacing them out because I know that they're really draining for me. And I want to be able to show up for somebody. So I'm careful about that. I'm never bored. This is never boring. I love dancing in different dimensions. It's just a space that just feels really natural to me. I have spent my entire life trying to figure out where I fit in this world. I've always been a little weird. I was a little quirky witch daughter who was adopted into a conservative Christian family who treated me with the most love and respect you could ever imagine. But I've always been a little bit off compared to what society standards will be, if you will. Mm-hmm. I have been through many careers. I've had to shift a lot in my life. And I feel like everything that I've done and everything that I have experienced up until this point has led me to this place where I get to show up as authentically as I've ever been able to. And I don't have to do anything other than just be myself. And so when I'm in these ceremonies and people, you know, getting to give a message to somebody from someone who's passed over is like one of the most beautiful experiences I think I've ever had in my life. To be able to like help someone see their value and like own it. Oh yeah. God, like that's just... like there's nothing better than this. Like it's not always easy. Sometimes, you know, like I said, sometimes I'm like, okay, what do I do? How do I make sure I'm really showing up for this person? And I have to watch my own ego in that. I have to make sure that I'm not making this about me in the moment, which is, it can happen. Like I can feel like, oh, am I doing enough? Am I being good enough? Cause that's my ego, right? That's my ego needing to be valued and measured. And, but I have to say, like, I feel exceptionally lucky to get to do this for people. And I didn't think this was going to be a thing that people, like, really wanted from me, but it is becoming very popular and people are coming to me a lot for it. And I feel like the luckiest person on the planet that people would trust me with such intimate moments in their life, ultimately.
I mean... like I said, I had no idea what you were talking about when you said, do you want to come do a cord cutting ceremony? But I just trust you. And I just said, yes. There was something in me that was like, yeah, do that. I've often described, and I'm going to do a little bit of a testimonial for you here as a person who's gone through this. We've already been talking a little bit about the experience that we had together. And we've talked a little bit about things that you've experienced with other people and in this setting. What I wanted to cut ties with shame mostly, that I have a lot of shame through different phases of my life from going all the way back to being a little kid, especially when it comes to my panic. I've talked on this show a lot about my panic disorder, about my fear. I talk a lot about my anxiety on my channel and on this podcast. And I've been trying to reframe my approach to my anxiety. I talked about on this podcast that for a while I was trying to get rid of my anxiety, get rid of my fear. That wasn't working. Had to realize, duh, you can't do that. You can't get rid of fear. You can't get rid of discomfort. You can't get rid of pain or sorrow. Those are parts of life. That's part of that impermanence that we've been talking about. So I've had to have this reframe of like, okay, well, how do I How do I reframe my relationship with my fear, with my anxiety? And I realized that I have a problem with feeling shame about it. That like when it's not something I've ever chosen, it just sort of happens to me. And from the time I was a very young child all the way up until, you know, being a 34-year-old man in the airport going to Ireland and crying as I'm getting on the plane, I feel deep shame and embarrassment about this fear that I don't control. And so I wanted to cut ties with that and also just generally let myself off the hook for stuff. I talked about this at the beginning of the episode. I struggle with forgiveness and forgiving myself. Wanted to just kind of go through these different ages and let myself off the hook. You talked about seeing these boys very clearly. I saw them very clearly. I know my brother saw them clearly because he knew all these boys too. And they're all there with us in this circle, these different ages of like the little kids, the preteens, the teenager, the kid in his 20s. I've talked about on this show and I've told people my whole life. I've told people my entire life. I've said like every time I've thought about quitting acting, quitting music, the stuff that I do and doing something more practical, there has been something, a voice that I recognize that feels, I always call it my higher self, that always tells me like, keep coming a little bit further, a little bit further. You're not done yet. Keep coming. And that's the thing that's kept me going. There's always been this thing that's sort of been pulling me through. And I've talked about on this show in episodes where I discuss my sobriety that at the time when I was first getting sober, living in New York, I talked about this on John DeLynn's podcast. Like this is a story I've been telling for years. There was this voice that was coming to me late at night. I was at my most suicidal, my most depressed. I had had suicidal ideation for years and years and years, but living in New York, moving to New York, getting my teeth kicked in day after day, it was the darkest it had ever been. And I was really considering that I wasn't going to make it out of New York alive. I was going up to the roof of my building regularly late at night and thinking maybe tonight's the night I jump off the roof. And this voice was coming in, this very clear voice. And I was really drunk and fucked up. And this really clear, sober voice would come in and pull me off the rooftop and say, like, back up, man. Like, you've been working really, really hard right now. And I'm so proud of you. And I love you so much. I need you to just go inside. And it would have me, like, look in the mirror. Like, it'd be like, when you go inside, I want you to look in the mirror so I can tell you I love you. And it was weird because I knew it was me. It was something inside of me. But it was a version of me that I didn't recognize. And it was like I kept calling it my higher self. And I've told, like I said, I've told this story to so many people that like some part of me, my higher self, it didn't feel external. It didn't feel like a visitation from an angel or from God or from like an extra dimensional being or something. It was me, but it was a version of me I couldn't quite grasp, but I trusted it and I followed it. And I got out of off those rooftops. I got into recovery. I got sober. While we were in this cord cutting ceremony, talking to all these younger versions of myself, you and I both recognized that there was one guy who was not on board yet. And I was like, yeah, this guy's not sure. And you talked earlier about we lit another candle for him. This is the version of me that lit was in New York. And you said, hey, talk to him, talk to this version and see if you can help him out. I started talking to him. And as I'm talking to him, I start recognizing the words that I'm saying to him as the words that the voice that used to come and talk to me on the rooftop said to me. And we're all collectively, the three of us, you, me, and my brother, are collectively realizing that, holy shit, it's me right now in this room talking to myself on the rooftop and getting me to come back. And it's me who's connected with all of these past versions of myself. It's like the Megazord version. We're all lining up and connected. And it's literally the movie Interstellar. Like, who put the wormhole there? There's a wormhole at the end of our galaxy that's pulling us through to a galaxy with habitable planets. Who put it there? And we find out at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, it was us. We put it there. And we pulled ourselves through time. It was one of the – and I'm going to say this at the beginning of the episode for the people who listen to it, the audio version, that like I need you to come into this with an open mind. People on YouTube, if you're watching this, it's just happening as you're watching it. But, it sounds crazy, but I wasn't on anything. I didn't take anything. I didn't take any psychedelics, stone cold sober. And we had this wild psycho-spiritual experience that was one of the most seminal spiritual experiences of my life. You had talked about before we even started the ceremony that like we might see that time isn't linear and stuff like that. Without going into like further detail, I think that's a sufficient testimonial to say like, we saw some shit, we did some shit, we healed some shit. It was wild. And I am just enormously grateful, forever grateful for you for offering that space and for holding that space the way that you did. It was
thank you.
It was better than I ever could have hoped for it to be.
That was like one of the best moments of my life, honestly. I think that like just stacks up in the top three best moments ever. First of all, because I love you, and I can't imagine what my life would be like if I didn't have my Austin in my life.
Well, I love you too.
And secondly, like, you know, I sometimes it's hard to believe in our ability to move through these spaces without some type of lubrication, if you will. Mm-hmm. Something that like softens the secondary consciousness, allows us into our primary. And you were completely sober when this happened. And we haven't even talked about this yet, but I think you need to probably explore that you are a bit of a conduit of sorts. Like you were able to create something there and I was part of it, but you were creating it in which you were able to access different spaces and time and dimensions, if you will. And I mean, that's a gift. That's a spiritual gift right in of itself. And I remember when I was with you and I was doing this and I was standing on that rooftop with the old you.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he goes, "Who are you?" And he like saw me and he was like, "Who are you?" And I was like, "I don't even know how to begin to explain what's happening.
To explain right what's now. Going on right now."
But it was such, it was just such a beautiful moment. And I love that I got to, because I'm just I'm newer to your life. So I didn't get to know all the Austins before. So I just loved watching all of you come together again.
Well, and we realized too that like he was like the hero of the story too. That we were like, he's the guy. He's the guy that like did the hard stuff so that this version of Austin could exist. But when I was that guy, even I thought I was going crazy at the time when I was standing on the rooftop and hearing voices and talking to myself. I was saying stuff like that. Like when you said, "Who are you?" When you told me that day, I was like, I was literally going, "Who the hell is talking to me right now?" And I was on the rooftop in New York going, what is happening? And there were I probably looked at you and went, "Who are you? What the, you know?" And it was like that out loud. I was standing on a rooftop in Brooklyn at 4 a.m. going, "What the fuck is happening? Who's talking to me right now?" You know, and thinking I was losing my mind. But there was like this really crystal clear voice that was like, "It's okay. It's okay. You're going to be okay. Follow me." And luckily I recognized that voice. Luckily he recognized the voice and trusted it. And I think that it was very useful that like, again, couldn't have understood it until we were there. We talked about this with death. It's not a thing you can understand until you were there. Couldn't have really understood what was happening, just that it was something to trust and something to move forward toward. Mm-hmm. Couldn't understand it until I was there in that room with you. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay. That's what was happening. I didn't expect in my lifetime that I would get an answer to what was happening.
I wouldn't either. Honestly, yeah. And I believe in some pretty wild stuff. So, and I want to like just manage everyone's expectations here. This was a humongous thing that happened. And I'm sure part of it is our energy together probably created some really amazing. Like,
you, me, and Adam.
Yes.
Yeah, me and Adam, the triforce of us.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I can't guarantee that's what it's going to be like for people every time they sit. But at this point, like I am beyond like setting limitations to what can be because I have, you know, when I was a little girl, I used to mourn that magic wasn't real. I used to mourn that Narnia wasn't a place that I could get to through the wardrobe. And I spent my whole life looking for magic. I spent my whole life looking for a Peter Pan to come and take me to Neverland. I have always been mystical and magical by nature. And I believed in it. That's why it was so hard for me that it wasn't real. And now that I'm finally sitting into who I am as a person, I'm living in magic every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. And I've never liked being alive more.
That's so awesome.
It's seriously, like, I love who I am, and I love that this isn't for everybody, but I love that people want to come and meet me in the space and they want to do these things and explore these opportunities, because I don't think there is a greater cause in this world than to want to watch the world heal itself.
Yeah.
That's
beautiful. You are doing one of these tonight, and I got to let you go and prepare for that. If people who are listening want to find you and want to do this with you and want you to be their facilitator, is there a way that they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. They can email me. So I have an email. It's thepathoftheplant@gmail.com. So they are welcome to email me, and I will totally will call and have a little consultation and make sure that I am the correct facilitator for you, because I might not be everyone's cup of tea. So, and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would love to open up my services to the rest of the world. So
thepathoftheplant@gmail.com. They can get in touch with you if they want, even if they're not in Utah. I've had friends who I've told this story to who aren't in Utah who are like, I will go to Utah to do that with her.
And I will travel too. If I have enough people in a specific area, obviously it's going to be a little more expensive to do it that way, but I would gladly travel to do this. I believe in what I'm doing with every ounce of my being. So I'm kind of curious to see where the string goes at this point.
I'm so happy that you found this. It feels like it feels like ever since I've known you, you've been hunting for this. It's been, I've seen you go through so many phases of like, this is the thing I thought that I was supposed to do. And I don't know, that's not really materialized. And now I'm trying this. And it's so lovely to see you find this. And it's such a like, a powerful version of you. So when you were saying like, I've never enjoyed being alive more, I was like, and that you love who you are right now. I'm right there with you. I'm like, I love watching that for you. And I also feel the same way. I'm like, I've never felt more powerful. I've never loved who I am more. So thank you for doing this service for people and for yourself and for facilitating it for me. And thank you for joining me today to talk about it so openly.
Thank you for asking me. I honestly am honored, and I'm thrilled that people want to know about it. Like, cool. You can do it. You can heal yourself. You want to heal yourself? Give me a call. Like, let's do this.
Hell yeah. Let's do this. I love you so much. And
I love you too.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you. And hey, everybody, thanks for listening. And thanks for supporting my brother, because this guy has the biggest heart on the planet. So support this amazing guy.
That's nice. All right. Okay.
All right. Love you.
Talk to you later. Love you. I'm not playing enough show. Whether he is right or not, I don't believe. If you're interested in hearing more from Lisa, she did another episode on this podcast about a year and a half ago called Change, that you can look up in the queue on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. And it's a good episode. We talk about her grief process and experiencing the change that happened when her father died, which is, you know, we sort of touched on that in this episode, this fear of death, this fear of the impermanence of things, the constant nature of change. And we did an episode earlier on change, and I think it might be a fun companion episode if you have the time and the interest. Again, the email that you can email if you want to connect with Lisa and potentially plan your own ceremony and have her facilitate that is thepathoftheplant@gmail.com. Hey, the campaign for the vinyl on Bandcamp, it's finished. We did it. They are going to mail out, Bandcamp is going to mail out records to everyone that bought one. I think it's gonna take to like January. That's how crazy this process is. I have been trying to get this record printed on vinyl for like a year and a half now, and it's finally happening, but it is just such a long, expensive, arduous process when you don't have a label. Doing it independently is a chore. And I'm just so grateful that we got it done. Thank you to everyone who picked one up. What Bandcamp is going to do is they're going to send out records to everyone who bought one, and then they're going to send me the remainder. They're printing 250, and I think we sold like 90. So I'm going to have like 160 left in my inventory to sell on my Bandcamp page and my merch, but I'm not going to be able to sell those again until I get them. And then you can buy them directly from me, and I'll probably, like, when I go play live shows, I'll probably bring them with me and stuff like that, and but I'll have them. It's just really cool that it's happening. I'm really excited. Thank you to everyone who picked one up. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want to support the show. Love to all the patrons. We've got some new patrons that have just shown up, and I thank you to them, and love to them, and welcome, and to anyone who wants to join us over there, Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Yeah, I think that's everything. I think we covered it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music. Also by me. You can find more of my music, you know where, Spotify, Apple Music, and Bandcamp. All at the links in my bio on all of my socials. That's about it. This show, if you want, you can watch it on YouTube. We're doing the video version now. I keep forgetting to say that in the audio version. There's a video version of the podcast if you want to watch mine and Lisa's face while we talk, or if last week you want to watch mine and Christian's faces while we talk to each other. You can watch that on my YouTube channel. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel if you haven't already. Yeah. Okay. All right. Love you so much. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Bye-bye. Oh, sweet rejection, have you come to see me home? I always thought much better of you in times when I was not alone. Here comes another year, making it all up as I go.